Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back. I'm Rob Schofield. Bill Coby is, by just about any measure, an unusual public servant. The veteran Republican has served as a congressman, state cabinet secretary, candidate for lieutenant governor, federal government official, state Republican Party chair, and even as athletic director at UNC Chapel Hill. For the past five-plus years, however, Coby has chaired North Carolina's State Board of Education through some tumultuous times, including several battles over who should oversee state education policy. Coby sat down with me in studio this past week for a special two-part conversation. In part one, we discussed a recent court ruling in the battle between the state board and Superintendent Mark Johnson and some other key debates over how North Carolina should mete out power in the education world. Well, welcome. It's an honor to be joined by the chairman of the State Board of Education and a distinguished North Carolinian who has served the state in numerous capacities, including as a member of Congress, Bill Coby. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Rob.
We were just discussing before we went on the air that you've chaired the State Board of Education for 5.5 years now. Talk to us, I guess, in general terms. I think a lot of our listeners probably don't pay attention to the intricate details of state politics, and they're like, who is the State Board of Education? Why do we have it? What is its function?
Yes, most people of North Carolina probably don't know that the State Board of Education exists. And yet, it is the only constitutionally created entity of state government, which tells you how important the founders felt like public education, a free public education. So the Constitution says that the State Board of Education is to supervise and administer a free K-12 education, and the superintendent of public schools is the chief administrative officer of the State Board of Education, and the superintendent is elected. It's an unusual model which has created conflict over the years, sorting out as to who does what when.
Very much smacks of sort of like a compromise was struck at one time. And when they struck that compromise, they said, well, those guys will figure out how to make this work later on.
Yeah, and for the most part, we have through the years. But there have been exceptions to that.
Actually, yeah, there have been some battles, especially in recent years, some court battles. There's a recent state Supreme Court decision on sort of the how we're divvying up the powers between the superintendent and the state board. Can you give us your reaction to that?
Well, it didn't come out exactly how we had asked.
Yeah.
We had asked that the law that the General Assembly passed be facially declared unconstitutional. The unanimous Supreme Court decided that that was too high a bar to reach to declare it unconstitutional. It took our power and cut it and pasted it to him. So we're pleased with the outcome of the lawsuit because now the highest court in North Carolina has ruled as to how this model of delivering K-12 education should be carried out. And it has declared that we have the ultimate authority over public education through our rules and regulations authority, and that the superintendent is the chief operating officer, chief administrator of the Department of Public Instruction. That's how we've been functioning anyway,
yeah,
Rob.
Yeah.
It's the way it's been happening since the lawsuit that June Atkinson brought about 6 years.
Probably don't remember.
No, and that was a lower court decision that was not appealed. The power to operate the department had been turned over to the chairman of the State Board of Education, and she went to court, interestingly enough, with the same lead attorney that we did, former Justice Bob Orr.
So as it stands now, the board is the chief policy-making oversight organization. The superintendent is more in the day-to-day administering of the day-to-day duties of his department. Is that how you would sort of break it down?
Yes, that's how it would, although the court wants to use the words rules and regulations other than the word policy, which has been a more common term before. But I see that they've tried to satisfy both sides, declaring us as having the ultimate authority, but that strengthening the hand of the superintendent going forward as the administrator of the Department of Public Instruction.
I mean, a lot of this, of course, that's going on in state government these days is there's a very strong point of view that's held at the General Assembly. They've been closely allied with the superintendent, and it seems likely there'll continue to be some points of conflict or at least disagreements between the board and the General Assembly, I would assume.
Maybe. Well, we hope not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not that we've had a bad relationship with the superintendent, but basically we haven't had a relationship over the last year. And perhaps there will be better working relationship going forward. But, you know, it was more of an issue of power. We have, with fidelity, carried out the laws that the General Assembly has passed, except for HB 17, which was the one that we challenged in court because we viewed it as unconstitutional. But otherwise, we understand that the General Assembly makes the laws, and we, as the Constitution calls for it, have to carry out their laws.
What about this confirmation process? There have been some gaps, right, in terms of the General Assembly confirming new appointees to the state.
Yeah, that's interesting. They did not confirm the last three appointments of Beverly Perdue.
Right.
So three of us are serving six-year terms as opposed to the normal eight-year term because they waited until, and in hopes that a Republican would be elected governor, which happened. And then at that point, Governor McCrory had six appointments to the State Board of Education, which the General Assembly confirmed all six appointments. And three of them have eight-year terms, and I'm one of the three that has six-year term.
Don't we have some others, perhaps, that have expired in the interim now?
Yes. Yeah. Well, two really wonderful people, Wayne McDivitt and Tricia Willoughby, have now served over 17 years on the State Board of Education. Two full eight-year terms, but they continue to serve, and I'm very thankful because we need everybody on the board, and they have a great track record over this time period. But the governor has nominated several people. He did last spring, and they have not been confirmed yet. One of them is being nominated for his second term, Reggie Keenan from Duplin County.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Well, I don't know. I don't have any communication on this issue with the General Assembly. Are they going to act before they adjourn in this short session? Nobody really knows.
Having these folks that are sort of in this never-never land or whatever you want to call it, does it affect the way the board operates? Or are you all just sort of plowing ahead?
No, we plow ahead.
Yeah,
and very thankful that Tricia Willoughby and Wayne McDivitt are willing to continue. They're ready to leave.
Yeah, I bet.
But they're dedicated public servants.
I mean, it's obviously a bipartisan outfit, and you all somehow manage to get along, which is sort of unusual these days.
Well, if you look at public education, of all things, it should be as nonpartisan as possible because we're talking about the precious lives of young children. And our focus is the students, and we unite around that. You know, what is best for the students of North Carolina?
There's a lot of issues I want to ask you about with respect to that.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about one other sort of structural debate that I know that's been going. We've heard rumors or rumblings at the General Assembly that we might even consider some sort of constitutional amendment to change how the structure of the state board is and how it perhaps relates to the DPI superintendent. Any word on that? Have you heard anything? Do you have any thoughts on
that? Well, I hear rumors just like you do, but none of them are absolutely that this is going to happen. And, you know, there are many models of how you run public education. Most common one, or the two most common, is that a board is appointed, like we appoint, and then they choose a superintendent, or the head of education, whatever you call it, is appointed by the governor. And that's a more common model. The way I look at organization, I think the best organization is one that works, gets things done. So I haven't weighed in on that at all as to what might happen.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sort of the state of education in North Carolina these days. It's the biggest spending item in the state budget. It remains always the most important issue in state government. Talk to us a little bit about where we stand. I know there are a lot of people who feel that education is, you know, public education is struggling mightily, but we also see some incredibly positive results in many of our schools in North Carolina. Is the glass half empty or half full?
Oh, I think it's definitely half full. And I think definitely we've improved and we know a lot more about delivering of education now. A real game changer is the whole area of digital, the use of digital learning, so that we can personalize learning, we can organize it in different ways. And where it's been implemented, generally it's been implemented very, very successfully, and we see tremendous growth and achievement among the students. But, you know, it's a huge enterprise, and it involves a lot of people. And whereas we'd like to wave a magic wand and get things changed overnight, you have to celebrate small gains, and I'm glad that the General Assembly has stepped up to the plate and increased salaries of most teachers, and now of the principals, getting us off of number 50 spot. And so, yes, I am optimistic going forward. The glass, I believe, is half full, but the toughest parts of this are the poor counties with less ability to tax and supplement the income of the teachers and principals, and the fact that this poverty is so difficult to overcome and address. And now we have a number of students in our schools that, you know, English is a second language. So I think being a teacher today has got to be more difficult than it's ever been.
It does seem it to me at times, especially as the husband of a former special ed teacher in the public schools, that we ask our teachers to be superhuman. They are presented with children who many times are struggling mightily. We've seen recent surveys that show that 70% of teachers say that they see hunger. Their students actually dealing with hunger in our state. And to expect them to take a child who's distracted by the fact that their stomach is empty and, you know, teach them to score high on a standardized test is a pretty
right.
tall order.
And we've made a lot of progress in that area.
Oh, yeah.
In delivering lunches to those that are at the poverty level, and also breakfasts in many of the schools, and sending food home. So, again, we've made progress, but we're not close to solving the problem.
You alluded to the fact that we are seeing a bump in salaries for most teachers and principals in the new state budget that appears on its way to passage as we record this, or on its way to the veto of the governor being overridden. But we did have 25,000 or 30,000 teachers and supporters in the streets of Raleigh just a few weeks ago who were asking for more than higher pay for teachers. They were asking for a lot of other important investments in public education, many of which have really sort of withered in recent years.
You know, we went through that recession, and we haven't totally recovered from that. And yes, we need to show the teachers more respect as citizens of this state. And I think that's part of the reason they were there. But it's much more than salaries. It's total funding. And in particular, we need more psychologists, counselors, nurses. We need them worse than ever now.
Effectively, we ask our teachers to be the nurses, psychologists, and counselors.
That's right. And not in all counties.
Right.
We have some wealthy counties.
Right.
But we're still a very rural state with many poor counties and many poor people living in those counties.
We know, in fact, that about half of North Carolina counties have actually lost jobs in the last several years, even at this time of general economic recovery. The reality is the gap between a lot of our struggling areas and our wealthy
and
areas
Rob,
is really growing.
That's been going on for decades.
Sure.
I mean, it's not a new phenomenon, and I don't know that we can stop that phenomenon of people migrating where the jobs are.
Sure.
Yes, if we can get natural gas and certain infrastructure to certain counties, that will boost their wealth, but this is a long-term problem.
Do you have any concerns about the general state of education funding? Would you agree that we probably need more than just to fund teachers. We could use more for textbooks and facilities, maybe even a new bond pay for facilities.
I do realize there's a limit because there's other things you have to do as a state. But this is, I would argue, the number one priority. And we as a board have endorsed, and there are legislators working to get the $1.9 billion construction bond pass, which would particularly benefit the rural counties, the poor counties, and the fast-growing municipal counties.
Another, of course, hot-button issue that we see in the public education debate these days is the issue of school choice. That continues to be a source of controversy in North Carolina public education as to how far we should go with that, how fast we should go with vouchers and expansion of charters and all kinds of different models of charters. What's your take on where we are on that?
Well, we have nothing to do with the opportunity scholarships or what is known as the vouchers. We definitely have public charter schools. It takes an enormous amount of our time. It has leveled off. We have raised the bar for approval, so we don't have near as many applications. The applicants really have to measure up, not only for us, but local counties and cities that have, you know, zoning restrictions and all that sort of thing. And I think that we're about at about 180. That's just an approximation, which is 80 more than the 100 that we were limited under the cap. And we have almost double the number of public charter schools in the state. This I can say, that I'm really think that we have a lot of really good public charter schools. We have put a number of them out of business, probably up to 10. And we can, if they falter, we can put them out of business. And it's really easier for us to do that than local counties closing a particular school. In the big picture, I'm proud of our district schools because they have chosen to compete and compete well, offering many more options and choices within the traditional districts. So I think on net, it's been a good balance, and it's settled down at this point.
I guess the idea with the charters was that they would be these incubators of innovation, which I guess maybe we see in some of them, others maybe not. I mean, the idea was, I thought, was that they'd be unfettered from these restraints that affect traditional schools, and therefore they'd be able to experiment, and then these great new ideas would percolate up, and then they would sort of go through the system. And
I don't know that there's great new ideas, but there's some old ideas that have really been implemented well by extending the school day, for example, and making things a little more structured, goal-oriented in some of the schools. So, yeah, we've seen some innovation, but I don't know what they expected. There's only so many ideas out there. There's always room for new ideas and better ideas, but most of them are already been tried at one time or another.
Our time is limited, but I do want to ask you about one other issue that's sort of percolated up at the General Assembly this session, and that's the idea of cities getting in the business of funding their schools and this of even starting their own charters and maybe using city property tax revenues to benefit the students who live within their cities. And obviously, this is causing some consternation in Mecklenburg County and could presumably have some impacts in other counties around the state as we go forward. What do you think about that?
Well, you're the first person that has asked me about
it.
But by and large, I don't think it's a good idea. I think we ought to work with the tools we already have in the toolbox. I'm not sure that it'll ever come to be because I'm not sure how much the cities want to get involved in running schools.
Obviously, what some of the many critics have said is that this is also a way sort of this problem of resegregation of our schools, which is clearly an issue in our state, this will expedite that. If we have wealthy, mostly white suburbs funding their own schools that are only going to benefit the kids in their cities, that just expedites and exacerbates this problem that we already have of mostly white, wealthy schools and mostly poor inner city minority schools.
Yeah, to an extent, people have moved to certain schools, which has had the effect of resegregating some areas, not just here, in the country,
sure,
all over. Yeah, I can see that concern. We need to keep focused on that also.
Well, gosh, I think we could probably go on all day, but our time is about up. I can't thank you enough for
it's
taking
a big
the time
subject.
Out. Well, you have it's an amazing amount you have packed into that brain. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and we congratulate you on your service and hope that the remainder of your term as state board chair goes very smoothly.
I sure hope so, too. So thank you, Rob. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out on the web and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, I'm Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.